Welcome to Boiling Point, the podcast to motivate ever-evolving entrepreneurs and forward-thinking movement pioneers. Our hosts, filmmaker Greg Hemmings and executive coach Dave Vail, are turning up the heat in the world's business communities. Our interviews with entrepreneurs, thought leaders, and movement makers are raising the temperature of inspiration. Live from the hottest studio in this quadrant of the universe, here are Dave and Greg.
Dave and Bill, that's awesome. I get to say welcome back to both of you. And why do I always say welcome back? Well, I think it's because I'm the engineer and I can do that, right? I'm the guy that presses record. So it's almost like you're coming into my little booth.
You have engineered this whole Boiling Point experience, to be honest.
Well, it's been interesting. And just today I had an equipment malfunction here with all this fancy new stuff, but my trusty USB blue snowball microphone has come to save the day. So I hope I sound okay. Bill, our incredible guest slash sometimes co-host of the Boiling Point, says I've got a very productive voice today. So I don't know if that means I'm coughing a lot or if I sound like a well-produced podcast
co-host. That was it, produced.
And Bill is, Greg, he's not only a podcaster, right? He hosts, guest hosts, and he's got another podcast going on I want to hear about. He's also, for people that know him, a prolific author. And today we get to talk about a book he has just recently launched. And I can't wait to hear more about it and just how it's being received and, you know, why people should be reading it. And I guess even kind of the, you know, where it came from and how many books have you published altogether, Bill?
I stopped counting at 40.
Oh man.
Now what's different about this one?
This is my life story. This one was actually interesting. A lot of times when you write books, you're trying to solve other people's problems or you're trying to get smart in something or you're trying to get interested. That's kind of how I've always learned. And this one is basically, at my age, I just, after 30 years of mental health, I had a chance to sit back and kind of reflect. And what's cool about this book is I took one part of my life that it was very challenging from the time where I started with my very first safe memory of my life when I was after I was adopted and I ended up in Charlottetown, Prince Edward Island. I was thinking about what was my very first memory in my life that was positive. It was when I was actually, I can recall as clear as looking out my window now in Ottawa when my trike was backed up to my parents' stairs and I was looking out over the Victoria Park and realized for the first time in my life I was safe. And then when you have that kind of experience at four and you kind of look and go, you're safe and you're in this really wonderful existence. And then I ran into the public education system. And in my journey starts really, and that's what happened. I'm sure we'll talk about it. But my story, Dave, is about how I, from the time I failed grade two to where I ended up learning how to read, and I realized that I had developed an experience that when I was able to deconstruct it, I created a model called the FIT model. And it's based off a concept after 30 years. I think you get to the point many times, why does someone come into my office and all of a sudden make a change? It's all, and whether they realize or not, but they have a kind of a fuck it moment where they just said, you know what, I'm going to do something. Hmm. How they get that moment, I'm sure you see it in coaching too, David. They just get tired of being tired. And so the model that I wanted to make sure people understood is how you move from fear to failure to focus to finish to flourishing. And that's what this book's about. And it's chocked with my story of where to help people get something tangible is how you can apply it to your own life. And then as we go through, I'll explain more as we chat.
I'd like to start with, you know, I think Greg and I probably had similar upbringings where, and I'm saying, I'm knowing Greg's parents, that there was probably very few times in my life I didn't not feel safe. Like, you know, if you think of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, like I never had, like I, you know, and I feel very fortunate and privileged to say that. And it's not to say there's not trials and tribulations and stuff going on, but I didn't realize it. So you got adopted at, how old were you when you were adopted? If we kind of go back to the start.
It's somewhere, and like, that's where it's foggy in my head. It was actually, my mom's 85 in palliative care, and I really never really had the conversation with her about who my real parents are or the exact date. But I knew I was in and out of foster homes, and I knew I was adopted quite early, and I knew that kind of stuff. But where everything I've kind of blocked, yeah, I've blocked a lot of stuff, and it's around four. That's my, where my memories start that I,
wow,
that I actually want to think about. The other stuff I don't want to think about.
Okay. It's interesting. Just this morning, and if my wife Jessica is listening right now, maybe she'll come in and fill in the blanks. But we had this very conversation because we've got a newish born, maybe 5 months old today. Eek! I should know this stuff. How old, Jess? 4.5 months. 4.5 months old. And because of COVID and that we're home, and because this is the first time my wife's taking a significant mat leave, we've all been able to hang out with this baby like all the time. And we're just thinking about how interesting, how different it is from the other two girls who didn't have that experience. Then Jessica was reading an article just yesterday, I think it was, talking about the importance of having in the first year of life, how important it is to have one safe relation. Like just one is what this article was saying, or study, I should say.
It's based on attachment theory.
Attachment theory. There you go. So, and then if, let's say the first year is missed, right? And then we started talking about the foster system. I was like, well, what about those poor kids who get shuffled around? Probably to loving foster homes, and I would hope in many cases, but maybe not. But even in the loving cases, how attached and safe are you going to get if you're being shipped around every couple months or 6 months or a year, whatever? We just had this conversation just today, Bill. I just find that really interesting that you've experienced it and you've unpacked it. And we didn't even talk about the title of your book. Why don't we just kind of rewind for a second what's the name of the book for our listeners, Bill?
It's called Stop Hiding and Start Living: How to Say F It, which is a fit model to fear and develop mental fitness. I have to read it.
I love the branding of it, because when you started going through the F's, the F lists of your acronyms, I was like, this is great. And then
can you hold it up, Bill?
Sure.
Yeah. Let's see here.
I love it. Yeah.
And the fit. I think fit, you're good at this stuff, Bill. Of putting the stuff together, right? Like good titles for books. And anyway, this is good.
Yeah. No, what I've learned from it, guys, is that I'll give you a quick example of how the fit model works. Yeah. David was a very accomplished hockey player, and I was just an okay football player. And when I got to university, my first year, I wasn't smart enough to know how to read the plays, and I couldn't learn the plays. And when I got to Acadia, where they gave me my accommodation, where part of the story is I talk about how I learned. But to give you a quick example, I was really okay in high school. But when I got to Acadia, I wasn't good enough. So I was fearful I was going to be stupid, never be able to learn the plays. So my first year, I didn't get to do much. And my second year, I had an injury. And then my third year, when I was starting to learn, I just finally learned how to learn the plays. I didn't get to start till my fourth year, but I became the most improved player in my fourth year, and I got an award for it. And let me explain what happened. Was I was fearful that I was going to fail and never, ever get anywhere. But I gave myself permission, because one person said to me going to off to camp in spring, he said, "What are you going to play next year, Bill?" And I said, "Oh, left tackle." He said, "You would never, ever going to do that. You're just wasting your time." That's all I needed to hear, to give myself the chance to fail. So I went fully to failing. I focused an entire 3 months. Anybody knows me, I never went to a bar, never did anything. I ate, lift, trained 7 hours a day. And I came back, and I actually was probably the strongest guy on the team, or one of them. And I came back, and I went from fear to failure to focus. I was finishing my training, and I was flourishing by the time I got to camp. And so what people don't realize, we go through a process, and they can happen in different levels. So in what I talk about in the book, guys, there's five levels. There's money, career, relationship, physical health, mental health. Now, if you only have 10 brain units a day, which you don't really have more, like that's just a metaphor. But most people, without realizing, spend 7 or 8 of their brain units on money and career. So we wonder why there's so much divorce, so much obesity, and so many mental health issues, is because many people are spending their brain units in the first two. So what I want to do is provide people the goal of the book, the FIT models, to give them a frame of reference for mental health, but they can take different levels and approach it. So for example, if you're in a bad relationship, why do you stay in a bad relationship? Because you might be fearful you'll be alone forever. And you, right? If you're in a job that sucks, why do you stay there? Because I could be fearful I could never get another job. Mm-hmm. So how many people settle for second best in their life and get stuck in their own head? And you know, I was on another podcast. I won't say who it was because I can't remember, to be honest, the other day. So, I said, they asked me a question about, you know, if you were to say one thing right now during COVID-19, what would you do? And it's literally, I believe, we've got to teach people more about mental fitness, teach them how to think better so that they can be able to solve more problems.
Do you, so Greg, I may have shared this with you in the past, but so Bill and I have had the pleasure, or I've had the pleasure of knowing Bill for a number of years. I don't know, I'm going to say 5 or 6, you know, we've been collaborating and doing stuff together. And I want to figure out how you deconstructed this, Bill. One of the things I picked up on early, so Bill is a columnist in the Global Mail, as an example, right? And this is one, I could probably give you 5 different examples. And at one point we were talking and he said, yeah, I think I should get a column in the Globe and Mail. I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, so how do you do that? I don't know, but I'm just going to do it. And I was like, well, do you know someone there? No. I've heard of someone. There's very few people I know that have ability to focus on a goal or an objective and find a path to getting there. And it's remarkable, to the point where, and then, you know, we have some, I guess we can't really talk about publicly, but some other cool things that you did in business and, getting assessment tools validated and into the market and creating relationships and stuff. So I'm one of those people that if you tell me you're going to do something, like I wouldn't bet against you. Like I would not, you know, like seriously, like I'm going to go on the pro tour. I'm going to, you know, you're gonna, like, well, frig, I don't know. He could probably do it. So, but I was always curious about, like, where does that confidence come from?
You're giving me a lot of credit, confidence. I don't know if that's something someone asked me the other day, is that I don't know if it's confidence or pure terror that drives my behavior sometimes. I think it's I have a tremendous anxiety of being poor because I, you know, worry about money more than most people do. So I push myself probably harder to make sure that's taken care of. I have a hard time relaxing and that kind of stuff. As I get older, I'm learning a little bit more that to relax in that part. But I think what it is, Dave, I just think I have a motor inside me that I've been told I'd be stupid my whole life or I'd be failure. Like when you fail from grade, well, I guess when you go to grade 2, part of the thing I say in the book is one particular teacher in grade 2 said to me, you know, you're really going to be just a good farmhand. You just need to behave. And you have those words that stick in your head and then they fail you and then all your peers go ahead of you. And if you haven't had that experience to watch your social group go ahead of you and be second best for the entire public education system and then go to school every day and feel you're stupid and dumb and you're trying to figure out plus I'm ADHD, I have auditory facial dyslexia and visual dyslexia. So even when you're talking to me, I'll lose track of what you're saying. And people that are ADHD, if anybody knows me, sometimes I'm a kind of a person like in 3 seconds can basically tell you go fuck off. And I don't even realize I'm doing it because I don't actually know sometimes when people are joking. So I can go, pretty quick.
Thank you for warning us on that, Bill. Like I was wondering a few times why you said that to me. And I was like, oh, what did I say?
No. But the other thing about Bill that's is wonderful, but it's exhausting. It's like, we'll start on this topic and then, okay, well, and then boom. And then boom. And I'm just like, I got to get prepared. Right. I'm just like, okay, I got to try. Sometimes I'm like, okay, I'm going to manage this conversation. I'm not going to let it go into the, just boom. And I just can't, like, I just get pulled along and it's like, but so it's, but it's, so it's out of terror or whatever, but there's, I would say the self-belief, you know, like there's, you know, and it's, to me, I've, or at least what I've observed is this idea that if I put the time in and I work hard, you know, kind of gets at that whole idea of like the talent myth, you know, that, you know, and this idea about deliberate practice and the value of that, and kind of gets away from this notion that, oh, so-and-so, you know, Greg's just naturally creative and that's why he makes these wonderful films. And, you know, Bill, you've just you're a prolific author because it just comes flowing out of you, you know, just naturally, you know, and it forgets that Greg and I always talk about the hustle, and we mean that in a positive way. The hustle required the dedication, the deliberate practice, but it's like a self-belief that I noticed in you. No, well, why couldn't I do that? I guess maybe that's what I was picking up on.
Well, I mean, I one thing, appreciate your comments, Dave, but I think the big thing, my big motivation for this book is I want to, you know, it's interesting. You know, we had a good week, sold, you know, a few thousand this week. And
wow.
You know, and what I realized is that just starting out, and I've never been someone who pays a whole lot of attention to book sales, because I've actually just finished my next book, like, yesterday. And so, and it's off the publisher in June. So, I mean, I was in isolation for 6 weeks. What else the hell do you got to do other than write? So, but I mean, my sense is this to me, the why I like it different, because I actually, it's interesting when you write stuff. I don't know if you guys ever written something and you kind of put it down, you forget about it. And then I hadn't read this for a year. So now I'm rereading my own book. And what's really, I think, the cool thing where I've matured in my writing a bit is, as I, and you would know this, Greg, is people want a story. Hmm. People like a story. Like I, you know, they don't, all the theory's great, but they want a story they can relate to, that they can buy on, they can hook, they can see the character go through the story that they went through. And that's what I really came out in this for us, is that it shows my story from where I went from not believing, where I could learn, all the way to where I'm flourishing. You know, how many degrees I got is not the big deal in this one. It's the fact that I believed that I can actually learn. But what I realized, to do, there is no goal line. There is no perfection. There is no parade. I'm 56 and I got about 6 more years and I'll be at my peak for self-esteem. Isn't it crazy? We don't really get comfortable with who we are till normally our early 60s.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a tough journey.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you folks are paying any attention to the research has come out. You know, COVID-19 before the pandemic was 20% of the population were struggling. It's over 50% now.
Wow.
So mental health right now, and we're not even, I don't know if you have ever studied disaster models. The real stuff's 9 months down the road, guys. We haven't even, and that's why I'm worried. And that's why I want to get this out and get people talking. I want, you know, if we can encourage people and do our little part, and, you know, we have our few listeners listen to us and we get the message. We want people focused on mental fitness, because your broker's region right now, you may not know you have what's called a default mode network. 49% of the time, your mind's wandering. You're the only species in the planet that can actually can be thinking about tomorrow, last day, week, planning, think about yesterday. We're the only species. So our brains are always all over the place. Now, add this extra function called COVID-19 survival 101, so I don't die. Now you have this extra drain on people's batteries and the process and the worry. I'm worried. I don't know if you guys are as much as me.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. But I, you know, I try to, I mean, I guess we're trying to remain optimistic, and that's why I like talking with guys like you and Greg, because it just, you know, it's nice to bounce ideas off and know we're all in this together. And going back to your book, you know, maybe there isn't a better time, right? For people to be really considering what they can do and how they can learn. And, to your point, I've got some feedback. Like, I had people reach out to me that have heard your story, Bill, that have maybe a child or a spouse or someone has ADHD. And like, how are you feeling being a role model?
Good question. It's a humbling experience, to be honest. I get a lot of calls. A lot of people say things. I normally get 3 or 4 notes a day from other people to say, hey, you know, I watched your video and it did this for me, or do you know that you did this for me? And I'm doing, you know, and I'm kind of a bartender's son. I just have the privilege to have the opportunity to talk. Right. I'm not doing this for the fanfare. I'm doing it because I feel it's the right thing to do for me. I mean, and I know that sounds selfish, but I feel giving back feeds my pump. Like, and that's why I do it. But, you know, and I think I'm not like, I'm probably like you folks. I mean, I make my living off of being an expert in the area of mental health. I charge to speak. I make money writing books. I don't feel bad about it because that's how I, my trade, right? But it's kind of cool knowing that how many people do you have to make a difference in it for it to be worth it, right?
Right.
Someone asked me that. Yeah. And I said, you're good enough for me.
Yeah. Well, going back to being, you know, a role model, it's so important for people. Well, and part of being a role model is being vulnerable, and I think, and authentic, which you are, and sharing your story, mm-hmm. and not sitting on your 2 PhDs.
But who's counting?
3. See, looking down at other.
I knew it was 3.
I know. I should know that, right? I should know that. You know, and looking down on others, right? Because no, that's your beauty. It's just reminding me when I screw up. But it's actually, no, it is a really remarkable thing, right? Because, you know, that's like, that's another thing that's really, I mean, don't you think, Greg, isn't there a good film in this, Greg? The Bill Howitt story?
Yeah. Well, because Bill's character is very, relatable. There's so many people. I remember going through school, we didn't talk about nor understand things like ADHD. You know, you knew them as kids on Ritalin. That's all we knew. We understood our friends who were hyper had this little pill that they had to take, but there was no discussion around what was going on. Right. Kids today are like, it's very much normal to understand what's happening, why your friend might have different ways of ticking learning in, for example. I think we have evolved a lot. There's a long ways to go, of course, but I think for our generation specifically, reading Bill's book is going to be cool because you grew up almost in the dark ages, Bill, with this. You were suffering.
Yeah, I was.
I don't want to assume suffering, but you were experiencing this in a time where people weren't paying attention nor understanding diagnoses, and they would just throw one specific medicine at people to calm them down. And, you know, and that's not the way it is today.
Yeah. And they wouldn't put me, my parents wouldn't put me on meds. My mom was old school and a lot of it, I mean, I have that traditional generation where you're told to sit down, be quiet, you to do it. Like, we didn't know there was a word called why. Like, my children learned with the why question. I didn't know there was such a thing. Why do we do that, Dad? Like, I remember a story jumps in my head real quick about why I was coaching football in my 10th year. I had my, you know, I played 5 at what's at university, but didn't get to, I only played a couple real full years, but I was on the team. And what was funny for me at when I was at Acadia was I had that experience, but I ended up coaching and I really enjoyed the coaching part. It was in my 10th year coaching. And this, I said to a group of kids, my linemen, sorry, I said, okay, guys, come on, let's get in the line. We're going to do our conditioning. And one of the kids goes, coach, why do we have to really run? And I, first time a kid ever asked me that question. So I called the head coach over and he goes, yeah, what's up, Bill? The kid's asking me why we should run. I don't really know how to answer that one. And he goes, he's laughing. He goes, what do you mean? Because you were my offensive line coach, and we never asked you why, so I never heard the answer.
That's awesome.
and he goes, he looked at me, he said, he smiled, he was really cool, super guy. He goes, different time, Got to come up with an answer.
You got to come. Okay, even the toughest of old coaches, they're like, all right, new rules.
But I will say something to you real quick, Greg. You made a point that's important for me, and I apologize to jump in, but I am ADHD, so I get an accommodation. Now, my point is this. Here's where the next step is. You want to make a film that'll go that every corporation's going to buy? They don't have? Ready? We've been talking about Bell Let's Talk stigma for a long time. Then we're training managers and, you know, what to do if you have someone for duty inquiry. You know what we have not taught anybody? Is the so what once you talk about your mental health issue? How do you talk to me and how do I talk to you? See, because when I come to you and I say to you, David, you know, I'm ADHD. Okay. You know, because you're an empathetic guy. And, you know, I'm auditory and visual dyslexia. And you go, oh, geez, that's interesting. You don't have a clue what that means for our experience. And what, because I haven't done my work, part of it's my responsibility as a person with a mental health issue to be able to articulate what do I need and how do what do I need from that relationship? What do I need from you? How can you provide support to me in my relationship? And how can you provide support to me? And we're not training managers on how to have conversations. Because guess what? I shower myself every day. I can drive myself. I'm pretty smart. I'm this and this. But think, be very, very clear. If I had no legs and I was in a ramp walking up and I had a visible disability, you wouldn't think twice about opening the door or asking me. But because I have an invisible disability, and you're looking at and you go, wow, okay, that sucks to be you in your own head, or I don't know what to do, or that's where the next evolution, where the that's what the film is missing. That's the untold story. Because what you're having is lots of people like me that are they're come through it, and lots of people are telling their story, but I'm realizing, so what? By now, after me telling my story for 30 years, I have a mental health issue. You've heard me say it 1,000 times, David. But we got to get to the next level. Like, what's that really mean? That's the next. That's a story that we have. That's the film that needs to be made.
That would be. Well, you guys, I know something will happen now as you guys talk about that.
Well, I mean, you already said every time Bill says he's going to do something, it happens.
It's going to happen. Yeah.
Maybe Bill can help me find some funding, and we'll make it. Bill, we could co-executive produce this thing.
I know where to get the money.
Okay.
Let's talk. This is how it happens. This is how it happens.
Boiling point.
I want a credit on it, by the way. And I was just going to say, though, Bill, to your point, is we had a really, you and I had a really interesting interview with Sheldon Kennedy. And
oh,
he was
amazing.
He was
and
talking about.
Greg, you know, was there too. Keep him.
Greg.
I was engineering. I was there.
Yeah. And Sheldon's this wonderful guy with this amazing story that is very well known around, you know, abuse in junior hockey, and then he got through it and got to the NHL, and then but he talked about his struggle trying to talk about it, and exactly what you said, you know. So it's almost like we need that kind of leadership almost, and we need people to help us, because for those of us maybe who had, you know, like, again, everyone's had their struggles but have had maybe different struggles, you're right, we, you know, it's hard to know how. I was fortunate because I got to work with young offenders when I was younger, and kids with special needs. So I had some training that helped, you know, me just learn, like, wow, you know, people have very different existence. But thankfully I had that. Had I not had that, you walk around, you know, in a very privileged way, and you don't know how to have those conversations. Mm-hmm. And once you know how to have them, they're not scary conversations to have. But to your point, a lot of people don't know how to have them. And you know, like, I mean, one thing I never appreciated was anxiety until I suffered an anxiety attack one time in my entire life. And I was in London and I was by myself, and I went, oh, and there, all of a sudden I went, okay, so this is like, it's not that I didn't believe it. I just couldn't understand it, you know, but it's too bad that I had to have that experience to really truly appreciate it, because there's a lot of things I'll never appreciate because I won't experience, right? So I love that idea of that film and the training and the stuff that could come out of that.
Well, the other thing too around mental health right now is important, because we're talking about it. I don't know if you know of a concept called psychoreactivity, but that basically means is as COVID-19, as we start to do return to workplace, there's going to be like the Hatfield McCoys. And what's going to happen is going to be people that are going to be hyper vigilant about wearing masks and gloves. and there's people that are going to be not. And they're going to actually take a position against each other. And if we're not paying attention from a social movement level about the amount of economic disparity that's happening right now, we are close right now to a really interesting shift in corporate priorities. You look at California right now, and look how beautiful it is without smog. You look at the globe right now, Mother Nature has done a lot of healing. Human beings have paid a little bit of a price because of this COVID-19 has created some inconvenience. But maybe it might help humans to get their priorities right in regards to resetting what our expectations are. A part of that's going to be people's mental health, is learning how to actually understand what happiness is. Happiness isn't money. Happiness is not a car. Happiness is something you have inside you that you can look at yourself in the mirror and be calm and peaceful. And people, that's one of the challenges with mental health, is that we have so many people that are disfranchised that are getting. And a part of people don't understand about mental health is miswanting. Is they get caught into wanting things, thinking that's going to be the solution to help me be happy, when the solution's looking you right damn in the mirror.
Mm.
Yeah. Right?
Oh, that's a really good point, Bill. Yeah, it's. I'm excited too. You know, of course, not disregarding all the pain that people are going to be suffering and are. But when massive shifts like this happen, a lot of great things come out of it too. Like even looking at what happened after the 2008 recession. Like, look what happened in technology advancements, and this stuff. It's a vacuum, you know. But the unfortunate part is there's going to be a mental health cost to all of this. And what you're saying, and this book is helping us articulate, is that we cannot ignore this in our communities and our friends and our families. And it's time to start being even more open with what this is. And like you said, invest in communicating with the people around you on how they can communicate with you and what your needs are. And you've always done that with me, which is interesting because, you know, I don't know too much of your details until this conversation now, but you know, once I asked you for some emails or some information on email and you said straight up, you know, it's going to probably come in a whole bunch of different packets because I've got ADHD. And I was like, oh, okay, I get it. I fully understand what you're saying. And I ended up getting what I needed, and it was great. And just so you know, your video is almost done now that we've got those quotes, just so you know.
Oh, it's super excited.
Be prepared. We're coming close to the end here. I just wanted to bring a little bit of levity to this conversation because a few minutes ago, I don't know if you guys noticed a big smile come across my face. Did you guys see that? Anyway,
you're always smiling, so it's hard to tell.
Oh, yeah. Something that popped up. Oh, this is great. Something that just popped up on my phone just now, 4 years ago to this day, this happened. And I swear I had nothing to do with it, but I'm gonna hold it up to the camera. Look at this. It's a Facebook memory from 4 years ago. Yeah. Uh-huh. Where somebody put Dave's face on a political poster, and to this day he thinks it was me, and it actually wasn't at all. And that just popped up right there.
And then they put "Vote Handsome Dave," and it was sign was popping up, and these pictures went out, and I was getting these texts from all these people, and I was like, oh my gosh! And the power went out the night before, and I was like, this is embarrassing. Like, why would someone do this? You know, and who did it? I couldn't figure out who did it
because that's bullying, would not be me, Dave.
And then I went. Well, Lisa's text, it hasn't gone viral. Like, and then Greg Hemmings post, ha ha! Look what I just saw. I don't know where he saw it. And Greg
that's
has
where it was.
A million Facebook friends. So thanks, Greg, for putting that out there and you know, all these comments. So talk about self-esteem, Bill, I had to restore it big time after that. When,
yeah, well, I'm sorry for you, but I'm not apologizing because I had nothing to do with it. I thought it was brilliant to see your face on a big political sign on the side of the highway. I thought that was very cool.
What party?
No, it was independent.
He's running independent.
And oh my gosh. Anyways, so I've never heard, but I had virtually no support around that because everyone said you deserved it, Dave. So
well, there's truth to that too.
Yeah, that's true. But we got to get to great to your book, Bill. Where do people find it? Where can they learn more about it? How can they learn more about you? You know, if they wanted to and I don't know if they could reach out to you directly or not, but if they wanted to learn more, yeah, you know, what are ways people can do that, Bill?
Well, I have a website, www.billhowitt.com.
When did you get this?
Yeah, I've had it for a while, bill.howitt.com. And that's all my book. And what we're doing right now is what I'm doing is a special, my COVID special, that if you buy at least 200 books for your organization, I will do a free webinar for you as well. So that seems to be fairly popular right now. So, cool. Yeah.
Well, let's help get this message out, Greg. And I look forward to reading it, and I was hoping I could get a signed copy. Is that possible?
Yeah, no, it's not a problem. I got a box of 50. I just got to figure. I just don't understand the shipping stuff. So I'll make sure you both get a copy. Happy to.
That'd be awesome.
I just don't know how to mail anything.
Well, you hold on to it till we get to have a glass of wine together in person.
Shout out to Bill Howitt. Thank you, brother. Takeaways Thanks. For you, Greg. What are you taking away from our
Well, courses? I just love what Bill said about the, you know, it's two-way street for all of us, depending on which side you were on. Like, yeah, if you know one of your friends or colleagues is, you know, living with some sort of a, even physical disability, but mental or physical challenge, if you will, to understand what do they need to be communicated with, you know? It's a very simple, nice human thing to do. You know, and on the flip side of that is, you know, people like Bill who, you know, understand that they need to be communicated in a certain way or they need different things just to be open with it, you know. And Bill, I think that wraps up what you were saying quite well, I hope.
Yeah. And well, for me, I would just say that, you know, get, you know, a resource that can help people expand their comfort zone and move beyond, you know, what they think's possible is exciting. And I think the more people that hear Bill's story, the better. And then the last thing, I do appreciate getting a credit on the film you guys do together.
Done and done. All right, guys, have a good one.
Thanks for checking out this episode of Boiling Point. Remember to rate and subscribe to us on iTunes and follow us on Twitter at Boiling Point Pod. To see more from Dave Vail, check out leadershipunleashed.ca or visioncoachinginc.com and on Twitter at Dave_Vail. And to catch up with Greg, visit hemmingshouse.com and at Greg Hemmings on Twitter. Thanks for listening, and remember, keep that pot boiling.
Hey listeners, I'm Christy.
And I'm Melissa, and this is Buried Motives, where we dig deep into the details of some of the most gruesome
dirtbag murderers. She said she enjoyed hurting things that can't fight back.
And that is a disturbing view into the mind of a murderer. And such a dirtbag.
Yeah, that's not even strong enough words. This is totally a recipe for disaster. And not to justify whatever is going to happen, but you can totally understand and see how this would be in the works.
If you were only to look at what she did later on and not know any of that history, she would appear like off the wall crazy.
Oh, 100%. Because we're not even close to getting to the end yet. But you can just see this pattern and all this kind of stuff developing in her, which is what we're here for. We're digging deep.
Join us each Thursday as we unearth the dirt bags that live among us
and the motives buried there. Hope you join us as we exhume the truth.